I'm Tim Rayner. I'm the director of the School of Social Work at University of Southern Mississippi. And all the things that the others have said is true for us in Mississippi, too. So when we started all this, the goal really is about how would we increase capacity? So capacity has been a central theme for all of us throughout this. And in capacity, we're really talking about what is services delivered, more services than what were delivered before, and then something to do with training, something with the workforce, the people that were in those settings, skills coming up so they would recognize, if I'm a primary care provider, that, oh yeah, 70% of patients that come in with chronic illness also have affective disorders. So we've had that dual charge. At least for me in Mississippi, when you talk about starting these programs, I started at ground zero with nothing but me. So there was no infrastructure, there's no anything in a clinic. I had the executive director of the FQHC, was part of my school advisory board, but we'd never really done projects together. So it's me and have another full-time job in addition to this one. So ramping up has been substantial challenges to just get people on the ground. So now I have to just add one thing. In Mississippi, I've been there for 21 years, and I've always had great motivation to make a difference in that part of the world. More health needs, more lousy health outcomes, lousy economic situation for more people than most places. But we never had any money. So I'd always dream about how I could do these things, and then this happened. Bad disaster, redemptive fact of that is there were monies that came back, and we could use them to develop programs to address needs of people that had been there for a really long time, with these disasters really just stacked on top of each other. So this, I want to talk about not the whole project, but just kind of what was my workforce development side, which is what I'm doing with students. So I'm going to describe, and I call our project in Mississippi, Mississippi Integrated Health and Disaster Programs, about the internship training model and some impact from that. We knew starting out, lots of mental health needs. Context also had evolving ACA rollout. Healthcare on the ground was changing. In terms of being able to train people in Mississippi, there were no persons for me to train that were part of the FQHC. In my case, in Mississippi, I have one FQHC operator. In Jenny's case, there were two counties, two systems. Glenn has five systems. Louisiana has more than I can count. Mississippi has one. So all of us were focused on one pipe to get these things through. Not enough people within it to train that did the So my solution was I have to go with the people I have access to. And my School of Social Work has 500 students. 150 of those are graduate students. That's the pool I can target with this kind of opportunity. So that really became more of a workforce development strategy for me. And I figure an outcome is those persons can get hired, they're part of coastal family health, that's success, or it's success if they're just employed in Mississippi because it's part of workforce development and it raises all of those systems that provide health because it needs to be in this kind of integrated model. Glenn talked about some of the rationale for why we're doing this. The first one, just worth mentioning, 67% of patients with behavioral health disorders don't get mental health treatment. So we know why we're doing this in primary care, because patients don't get mental health when they typically go to primary care settings. Hang on, I have to turn my pages here. So I like to think that when we talk about training models, especially in Mississippi, it's like our coast, our three coastal counties, really are a laboratory. Disasters come there a lot, and we have the worst health outcomes anywhere. So if you come there, you really get to address a whole lot of things that are real life, and they keep happening. So it's a laboratory. It's a good training place because the laboratory keeps changing. So the training model that we have developed, because I'm taking in students, and I'll tell you how many right now. We've got around 34 that have passed through our system. But this is an evolving thing. So our training, it used to be a week, now it's 2 to 3 days. So all the students are with I have seven licensed social workers that work with them, and they do the training. What do they talk about? In social work education, I don't know how many of you are social workers here, but most of what we do in social work is really talk about mental health and mental health markers as indicators of progress. So we do DSM. There's a lot about affective disorders. We don't typically talk about biological markers of health. So in this training, we're talking about A1Cs. We're talking about BMIs. We're talking about checking your feet. Especially with the chronic illnesses, viral loads. So those are things that typically haven't been included in what is the usual social work curriculum. And we try to convince people that there are parts of their education that they need to pull from. And this is true also for the people we hire, because we can't hire people that know how to do this. They're not out there. We're creating them. So what kind of people do you get? We try to hire people that have hospital experience, medical kind of stuff. We need people who have experience in mental health. That was my background. We need to have people who've done crisis emergency kind of things. We need people who have done case management, outreach kind of stuff. And we need people who've done sales, because we're doing marketing in every clinic where we put people. So it's not somebody that you can just go grab off the street and say, oh, you have this degree, you should be good in this setting. That's not true. So kind of a different rant about just who we hire. We've discovered also that the personalities of the people we have matters almost as much as what they know. So I have some people who can go in and they can sell this health integration model to any primary care provider. And within days, that provider doesn't want them to go to the bathroom because they're not on the floor in the clinic all the time. And that's the personality and the charisma of the person. Then there's those folks that are very quiet, they're laid back, they're very thoughtful, they're very smart. They can't make the connections. They can follow in after the sales, but they can't initiate. So we're having to move people all over in order to make the, depending on where the clinic is in that relationship. So back to the training. Have to teach them about chronic illness. We need to talk about care coordination because we're doing more stuff with chronic care. And an element that's unique for us is we have to teach them about the fact that we're company in somebody else's house. This is not an agency they've been hiring in. They're not on the payroll of a FQHC. They're on my payroll. And that's a good thing for them because they're independent, but it's also a liability in some ways because they cannot be a part of that system. So we have to get them all into their EHR system. They have to have badges. There's a whole bunch of stuff that gets into this gray, we're shared people, but we're really not the same system. So then there's also just the culture of that agency and what we talk about, and all of you have heard these words, the huddles, the handoffs, follow-ups, all that. And those are the assessment tools we use. And then in our training, we spend time talking about what's our own electronic record. We call it Dagger. And it runs parallel to what is the EMR in that system. So they use NextGen as their EMR. It does not collect, no matter all the mistruths that they sold us when they marketed that system, that it would track mental health indicators. They do not. So we've fortunately had this built and running it alongside, and it's going to be super helpful for us to track what really will be longitudinal studies with these patients that are part of that system. Just a second, let me do this. Okay. So I've been wanting to do that for a while. So that's the training model. Our selection of students, it's in MSW programs, there's 60-hour programs, 2 years. We're only taking second-year students, somewhere between 10 and 13. They work 2 to 3 days per week in clinics, and they're there for a year. So they are investing 600 hours each in that system. I'm able to pay for their tuition, not to exceed 9 hours. I pay them a stipend around $3,000. So for a student for a year, that's $13,000. So it's not a bad package for MSW students who typically have zero help getting through. And it's a competitive process, so we really get to have good students. We're doing something that's a field unit model, common in social work. I have 7 persons that are hired and are placed in 7 clinics. To each of those field instructors, we place 2 to 3 students. The hope is that there's going to be the right kind of relationship between the apprentice and the mentor, that this magical environment where skills can be developed around integrated health. Because they've not seen that, it's not really something they can read about. But they're given cases, they do the documentation, they do the calling, they do all that. I have to keep going fast. So this is how many students we've pulled through the system so far, 34. How many services have they delivered? And when I'm saying they, I have 7 full-time staff, and then that's multiplied by the number of students they have in 5 full-time clinics plus 2 that are part-time. We're going to be going to 2 more. But we've seen a lot of patients. Most notable is the number of chronic care patients that we're seeing. We're really targeting patients that are diabetic for the PCMH and meaningful use. So that's really become a target of how we're doing this. The FQHC wanted to charge patients individually for traditional mental health. We don't want to be in the business, in my perspective, of what the CMHSs do. If we can wrap this around what is the primary care physician's activities, then it's non-stigmatized and it's just normal. Patients come in for diabetes and then they just automatically roll into these health education and these lifestyle support kind of activities. And that's been received really, really well. Is it like 1 minute now?
No, you have all the time.
So I thought. Okay. So, look at that. So I would say this training field model has been really effective for delivering services, and it's been effective for training clinicians to do what is health integration. And I can't emphasize enough that we don't know what that looks like because we're inventing it when we're doing it. And I think I did a presentation at the National Association of Social Workers Conference in D.C. a couple months ago. Many people are talking about what is integrated health. Very few are actually doing it. So we're about 2 years ahead in terms of the actual doing. How do we bill for it? That's a problem, because we don't know what it is we're doing yet. And we don't know how those units, whatever that thing is and how we describe it, is going to fit with what are going to be the codes for billing. So Glenn's done well with what are mental health billing and medicating kids. In our setting, there are codes for care coordination that are on the insurance plans, but they're not turned on for Mississippi. They're on in the Northeast, but they're not on in Mississippi. So if we're going to bill, it's going to be around care coordination. And I think that's where lots of this momentum is going, is around chronic illness management and what is lifestyle interventions. And in my thinking, social workers are really in a good place to both coordinate what happens within the clinic and to reach out to what is on the outside, which is really where the lifestyle stuff has to happen, and communities have to be built to embrace what are those health focuses that encourage healthy living. And in a lot of our places, that isn't the case. I mean, you can't buy good food. You don't have good housing. I mean, there's a whole lot of things that then impact what is wellness that you see in the clinic. So I think we've moved into the right place. The field model works. We've been able to extend the services into the clinics. And we've made really good headway around what is technology that's running parallel with the services delivered. I have a PhD computer science guy that's been working with me, and we've managed to do some things that most folks don't ever dream about doing in the delivery of health because I have somebody like that, and we're building the stuff to go with it. So exciting stuff about what is health integration, and glad I could be here for a minute. Thanks. All right.